Welcome to Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week you will learn the secrets to running a business without the stress. Here is your host, Angela Council.
Welcome to this week's episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business, where every week we get together and learn the secrets to running a business, having a life and doing it without all of the stress. And this week, I actually am joined by someone who's actually in the retail field. Because most of the people that I interview on this podcast, they tend to be more in the service, but we got someone now who's in the retail. So Selena Knight, it's her mission to bring business into the retail world, particularly for small business owners. She sees so many women who are working in their own business, but they just don't know how to find the time to learn new things and grow and be inspired. Selena has run her own retail store before, so she understands what it's like to be in retail. And we're going to learn a lot from her because I have actually just found out, even though we're recording this podcast in August, it's almost Christmas. And that kind of makes me scared because all of Selena's clients are now into Christmas mode. And I'm thinking, wow, that's just so far away. Apparently it's not. So welcome to the show, Selena.
Thanks so much for having me on, Angela. And don't let Christmas scare you. I can share a whole bunch of things with you that will make Christmas a whole lot less scary.
Because I think it's important not only if you are in retail, but also if you are in a service-based industry, because what happens is a lot of businesses, they kind of shut down over Christmas or they lose their business and they don't have enough business to keep them growing through the, you know, from basically, people say here in Australia, from the 1st of December to the 1st of February, nothing happens and in the service world. So
pretty much, yeah.
We've got to, you know, it's really important as business owners that we can, we're either going on holidays and that we're not worried about that at all for 2 months, or we've got to find a way to make our businesses continue to run even though we may not have as much coming in. Now, obviously, retail's a little bit different because running right up to Christmas and probably into New Year is their busiest time of year, but they still then have to plan for the slow time after when everybody stops buying and spending because they've run out of money in the new year.
This is so true, and this is what I see so many retailers do. They, you know, they get all excited about Christmas. They have the big bills that come in. They manage to stumble through the October, November, and even December period, and then January hits and all the big stores are on sale. So unless you're on sale as well, you aren't getting that kind of turnover, and that kind of goes right through till about March. You might have a little bit of back to school at the end of January, early February, if that's the industry that you're in. But what I generally find is that January, February, if you're not in a holiday destination, is your lull time. So you need to actually plan what you can do in your business in that time that kind of sets you up for the next 10 months. So it's actually using that time to your advantage. And one of those things is going on holidays. Like, I am seriously devoted to spending some time. And if that's the time that is best, you know, the way that you can best use your time, then that's what you should be doing. And in fact, I have a list of things that you can do when retail is slow. And that is on the list. Go on holidays.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Unfortunately, well, for me, that time of year, it's good for kids are on school holidays, but it does become more expensive. But just give me a little bit of background. How did you get to be doing what you're doing? Now, I know that you've been in retail before, and you actually were in retail in the middle of the GFC.
The GFC, yeah, because who opens a business any other time than in the middle of the GFC?
You'd be amazed, the number of people that I know that have done that. Because we didn't know it was coming, did we, really?
No.
And then all
no,
of a sudden you're in it, and we don't know you're in it until you're out of it.
And I'll tell you what, it's a funny thing, retail, and I really want to get Bernard Salt, the demographer?
Yes, demographer.
I so want to get him on the podcast to explain this to me, because I feel that retail takes a dive when the media says it's going to take a dive. So they say that everything's really, really bad, and all of a sudden you find out your sales dry up, but you're thinking it was fine until they mentioned it was bad.
That's right.
So I would love to know from Burden, you know, he's on my list. How does it work? Because it seems to me that the only way it seems to change is when the media tells you that it's changing and everybody goes, oh, it's getting bad, I better stop spending.
Yes. And I actually think I think you're dead right there, because it's not just in retail, because I find that the same thing as being in health, that all of a sudden, you know, there's some type of media story and no one wants to see a naturopath or no one wants to do this, and or everyone, the media is just such a driving force in our lives, and whether or not it's traditional media or social media, one little word can change anybody's business. And I think that's really, really scary because they have so much power.
And times have changed. So you asked me, how did I end up here? And if you would have asked me 10 years ago, I would have laughed at you. And I do remember it was about 15 years ago. I'm going two stories here. So about, no.
You were only in nappies then, weren't you?
No. So my husband and I got married 12 years ago. So probably it was just not long after we got married, we went and saw a financial advisor. And at the time I was working for the government. I was an arborist. That's my trade. So a tree surgeon.
So you've come a long way.
I've come a very, very long way. But I'd like to say that was my... I'm going to tell you two stories. They go together, I promise. So I like to say that being an arborist and a tree surgeon, and I was a horticulturist before that, was my baptism of fire into customer relations, because trees are really, really emotive. Like, the environment is really, really emotive.
Totally. I totally get that.
And the people who love it want to tell everybody that they love it. And when they're not happy, they will tell everybody that they're not happy. You know, they chain themselves to trees.
Yes. Yeah, and for a good reason, because actually in our area, every time you drive around somewhere now, you drive into places and they've just cut down all the trees because they've got the big roads going through and big developments. It's like you just drive around the corner and all of a sudden these beautiful trees that were there yesterday are just stumps. It's like, oh, it's like parts of you are being ripped out.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes there's a reason for it, but sometimes it's development. So I love the environment. I'm a passionate sustainability advocate, which is how I ended up in that domain. So this idea of having to deal with, like, clients every single day, you know, we worked for the government, so they were your constituents, meant you had to be nice and you had to find a win-win situation. So right from the age of 17, I was doing negotiating. I used to joke that, you know, I could negotiate anything and I could get people to see my point of way very, very, or not my point of way, but I could see the point, but the reason for something having occurred, even though it maybe wasn't the best outcome for the other person, but explain why it had to be the way it had to be. So that was my baptism of fire into customer service. And I remember going to that financial planner, and I'd been in that job for 10 years. I loved it. I'd moved my way up. And the guy said to me, like, you know, think about it. If you could, at 40, what would you love to have? What would you love to be? What would you love to do? And I said to him, I just want to be able to choose when I want to work. So I don't have to be here at 7 o'clock every single morning and leave at 3:30. I want to be able to choose how I work and where I work and when I work. But when I work was really, really important. And I remember leaving that going, huh? Like, you work for the government. Like, you might be able to have a flexi day and maybe you could move your time from 7 till 8 and work back an hour, but...
Not much choice.
There's not much choice here. You get your flexi day once a fortnight, be happy with it. And fast forward to... Eight years ago, my daughter's just about to turn 8 this weekend. Nine years ago, I guess, I was pregnant. And being passionate about sustainability, I'd moved to another section of the government and I was still working with trees, but I was working with trees that needed to be pruned around the power lines. So if there's ever an emotive cause around trees, it's trees that need to be cut for the power lines. So I was pregnant, and being super passionate about sustainability, I wanted all these things which you couldn't buy back then. And the whole point of this story was to say to you how different things are to 8 years ago. And I have that sort of delineated because that's when I was pregnant. We didn't have mobile data on our phones 8 years ago. You know, I remember having to buy a prepaid dongle to take to the hospital to send the photos to the overseas relos. And we had Facebook, that was new-ish back then, but I remember I had to get the prepaid dongle to send the photos. So much has changed in that last 8 years that the world of business has changed. And you were saying just before about, you know, one word or social media or the media can change. And it can change in an instant because we are so connected these days that that's a bonus in some ways, but of course that's a hindrance. But back to the shop. That was one story I was trying to tell you. Back to the shop was I had my daughter, couldn't find all of these products online. I wanted reusable nappies. I wanted bamboo clothing. I wanted, you know, eco-friendly products. And as most retailers do, if you can't find what you want, you create it. So opened the store on my daughter's first birthday. We were painting to open the first store. Opened that up, went really well, and I wanted a shop that was based on community. So it was really about bringing the community in and having them involved. So we used to hold workshops and, you know, we used to have mothers group and we used to have book club and all that kind of stuff. Because that idea of customer experience is just catching on now. And I like to think that I was a bit of a forerunner, and this is how I tell my clients now that they should have their stores. They should have it their stores in a way that actually you make the customer want to come in. Yeah. You just come in and say hi and see what's new.
Yeah.
Because
and,
they love
And you did there. That really well, because that's when I very first came across you many, many years ago, because I actually ran one of those workshops in one of your
You
stores.
Did?
That was many years ago. But that's what that is really what you do really well. And because, I mean, I had your local store just up the road from here, and I know you had one on the other side of the city. And it was, you know, people knew about your store because of the community. Yes, you had great stuff in it, but they knew about it because of the community that you'd built.
And that would be the thing. People wouldn't just say, go there. They when people would advocate for what you sold, it was always with the tagline, because they'll help you, or because they're lovely, or because, you know, go there for XYZ and one of the girls will show you how to use it. And that's what we wanted to be. We wanted to be the shop where you could go if you had a problem, or we fixed your problems, whatever they may be.
Because to be honest, really, your stuff, you could buy stuff cheaper in Target, Woolworths and all of that. I mean, yes, you had your specialty range, but, you know, if someone wanted something for a child, they could go and buy it cheap if they wanted to. But people don't when they know they're getting more for it. I think particularly mums with young children are prepared to spend more money when they're getting more for it, when they're getting that help, when they're getting that personal attention. Because really, you go into Woolworths or Big W and buy something and the 15-year-old kid has no idea.
Yeah, that's the shortcut to the answer of how you can charge more for something. So you can have the same product that the person online has, and they've got it $5 cheaper, but if you can give an experience to the customer, and that experience needs to be what your customer's looking for. Maybe it isn't the community workshops or the book club or whatever. That's up to you to figure out for your customer. But if you can provide that service, price is no longer a motivator, and they're prepared to spend the extra $5 or the $10 or the 10% just to have that nice feeling.
Yeah. And if they're not, they're never going to be your client anyway.
They're always
going to be the big supermarket's client, so don't even bother chasing them.
And the prime example of that, like big box store, is IKEA. Like people appreciate what IKEA is. They appreciate the fact that the majority of the products are sustainably built. They're relatively price conscious, but, you know, they have upper and lower end products. But you dread going there.
That's right.
You know that you're going there because you want that thing. And whether it's that thing based on price or whether it's that thing because it's the perfect complement to what you're looking for, you're filled with dread every time your heart
plummets. You can't go straight there. You've got to walk through the maze.
And unless you're really lucky, it's probably an hour drive. Like, we have three of them in Sydney now, but they still are all an hour away.
And an hour to park, because the parking's always shocking. I don't know why, the parking's always terrible at IKEA.
And you can go online and it will tell you that the thing you want is in stock, and you get there and it's out of stock. Mm. It's just a letdown. It's like a big anticlimax. And I'm not just bashing IKEA. Like, this happens in a lot of stores. Yeah. I just know that personally, IKEA has a lot of things that I like, and every time I go there, even though I check online, they never have what I go there for.
And do you always buy stuff that you didn't go there for?
Always, because you kind of think, well, I'm here.
Yeah, basically,
I'm here. Throw that in
really
as well.
I really need that, but maybe one day I will.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's great for them, but the fact that you have to almost put a whole day aside to do it, and the fact that it fills you with dread, kind of isn't the best customer experience. And when I sort of reference that to my favourite store, which is a store called Anthropology in America, I just like going there. To be honest, a lot of their clothes don't fit me because I'm a really hourglass shape, and hourglass people are really hard to fit. But, you know, I go there and they have homewares, they have clothing, they've got stationery, they've got furniture, they've got, you know, they've got a bit of everything. But their customer experience is phenomenal. Mm. So you go there and they have the pitcher of water, and in some of the more higher profile stores, they may have like cakes or sweets out that you, you know, just help yourself. When you go into the change room, you get your own personal assistant. So if you need another size, they'll come and take it and get you another size. They, you know, they target you really well in their advertising. I think they actually advertise too much, but, you know, that's my preference. It's obviously working for them.
Yeah.
But I actually do road trips when I go to America. Like, how many Anthropology stores can I see and photograph? The current top is 6, but I'm heading off to Texas in a couple of weeks.
So you must be fun to travel with.
My daughter loves it, though. So she quite gets the visual merchandising. She's way more creative than I am.
Hi, sorry for the interruption, but I just wanted to tell you about our private Facebook group, Stress Free Living. That's where we have lots more conversations about reducing stress. I share lots of tips for you so that you can run a business, raise a family and look after yourself. So check it out on Facebook. Back to the conversation.
So I have no creativity whatsoever. If it's strategy you're after, if you want me to help you build your retail business, if you want me to help you put systems in place, if you want me to help you get growth, that is my thing. But when it comes to creativity and merchandising, I suck big time. To the point where when the stock would come in, if I happened to be working in the store, the girls would actually write notes to me saying, can you just price the stuff and we'll merchandise it? Because otherwise they have to spend half a day fixing the terrible stuff. So but I appreciate merchandising. I know the concept of it. I know the rules that go with it. I know what I like. I just can't create it. So I love taking photos of their merchandising. I love their website. And I love the fact that that experience translates. So I recently held a masterclass and we talked about customer experience. And we talked about how when you go to your favorite store, you know, you start to walk that little bit quicker when you're 20 meters out and you start to walk that little bit quicker because you worry that they might sell out of something that you don't even know you want yet.
That's right.
You know, they've just got, and this is what I do when I go to America and I go to an Anthropology store. I'm like, I've looked at everything online. Like in the airport lounge, I've spent hours on the website, so I know what's in every single store. But, you know, you start to almost run because what if someone buys the last thing that I don't even know that I want? And then you step over the threshold and everything slows down. And you start to look around, you start to relax, your eyes dart around, but you actually slow down. Like your heart will slow down unless it's beating with more excitement. But generally you start to linger, you start to pick things up, you start to touch them, you start to smell them. So the process works in reverse once you get inside. And if that happens with your customers, you're doing a really, really good job because they want to have that experience. And that is what I wanted to create. So, but a lot of people say, can you do that online? And the answer is yes, because I have that same feeling when I type in anthropology.com and just before my little finger hits the enter button, I get the one heart palpitation that's like, what's on the front page today?
Mm.
Because they change it out so regularly. And, you know, it's aspirational. I can't wear a lot of their clothes, but it doesn't mean I don't want to look like that. In my head, I do. So it's translating that customer experience, you know, from your store to your online site and knowing that when your customer, if you've got a physical store, if they ever actually get there, they walk in the door and they go, this is exactly what I thought it was going to be like.
Yeah. And even with the online stores, it's also about the delivery, isn't it? I mean, because a number of times you can just order something from an online store and it just turns up in a post satchel and that's it and it's just been shoved in there. No, nothing. But I've had other places where I order things and they nicely wrap it. Maybe they'll put a note in with it. And whenever I send my books out, I always write a personal note with it and I actually gift wrap it as well. And those things don't take anything extra, but I think as someone receiving it, if you receive something in the mail which looks like a gift and it's nicely wrapped with a nice, and it doesn't even have to be a handwritten note, I mean it can just be a nice note saying thank you for buying for us, I had someone, she does essential oils, and it says this gift has been scented with this this oil or something. So they put a couple of drops of oil out. So when you open it, you smell the oils. And that's the experience. And you go, well, yeah, I'll buy from them again. Or I could just buy from the essential oil company, just gives it to me in a box and doesn't give me anything.
And that depends on your customer base. Like, as I look out the window right now, the Australia Post guy is not knocking on my door, which is great because we're recording. I can see him putting the parcel in my letterbox because we live on a battle axe block and, you know, it's way too hard to walk the 10 minutes.
No, I have the same problem. I live up about 20 stairs and they won't climb up it.
Yeah, but I know what's in that package, and in that package is some dog worming tablets and a dog toy. So I'm not expecting that to be
right,
wrapped.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you need to identify who your customer actually is, because that if they went and wrapped that, I would be thinking it's a dog toy. You've just added that into the price. Do you know what I mean? Like,
but they could still package it up nicely to you.
They could, and they could put a funny little note, yeah, or they could give me, like, what they could do is just put it in the satchel, but with a dog training tip on,
yeah,
a card.
Yeah.
You know, this is how to teach your dog how to stay, or something along those lines. So it doesn't necessarily have to mean making everything beautiful. It could be making things fun. Mm. But it always has to be something that the customer can take away and it makes them feel better.
Yeah, and that's something they weren't expecting.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, if I open this package, I've not bought from this company before. So if I open the package and there's something, you know, some fun dog, even a fun dog fact would be cool.
Yeah.
That it just makes me smile when I open the package, I will look forward to getting the packages again.
Mm.
And I'll go back to that website first because they were fun and they were helpful. So it's really about that customer experience. Now, we were going to talk about cash flow.
We were, but we got into,
customer experience. So which one would you like to go on with?
Well, we can, but I think it actually ties in because, you know, if you're not giving good customer experience, your cash flow is going to suffer anyway. Really,
it
I
is.
Mean, they're tied together. I mean, and it's really about how can you do what you do differently to what everybody else is doing, because there's very little originality in the market. I mean, when we're talking products
and services,
but you make it original by you.
Exactly. You make your brand original.
Yes, that's
right. And your brand is your store. Like, I don't like to say your retail store. I like to say your brand, because that's exactly what it should be. Even if you're selling other people's stuff, it should be about your brand. And that customer experience goes on, we'll get to cash flow because this is part of it, but that customer experience, it goes on beyond when I've bought. So I want to, for example, this dog pet company, it'd be really cool if they could go, and I don't know if they have yet because I've only just ordered, but if they then sent me an email that had, we'll use the dog training as an example. So over the next 3 weeks, maybe they could send me one dog tip every week. Or, you know, one fun thing that I could do with my dog. Or maybe they could highlight local dog parks in my area. But just sending me a series of emails, and we call them automation sequences, that are relevant to the customer. So it's having your back-end systems in place and knowing what your customers purchased or how often they've come back. And this, you can do this automated,
yeah,
like through automation. It's not a thing that you have to spend every weekend, you know, working out who bought what.
Yeah.
But that makes me feel like I am part of your team, like,
yeah,
I'm part of your brand. Whereas if I just get this parcel and that's the last I hear about it, I don't have anything to remember you by, other than I once bought my stuff from that company. I can't remember. I actually can't tell you the name of this company because I don't remember them just yet.
But, well, I'll actually tell you a story, because I buy from a company, and I know, and I buy pet food, and I'll tell you one thing that I don't like about this company, and it's not to do with the company itself, it's to do with their delivery, because what they did to one day, I order dog food, and as I said, I live up 12 stairs, and they don't want to come up to the front stairs, so what someone did once, and on the outside it says it's dog food, and so what he did is he just threw it over the fence to the dog.
Oh, handy.
Because I was recording a podcast at the time, so I didn't kind of go out. I saw him come up, and I thought he'd walked past and left it at the front door, but he hadn't. He'd just thrown it over the fence. And then I went out, and the dog's actually opened all of his dog food and is eating it. And I went after them and went, you know, I'm not too sure I want to use this company again, because for me, that's a bad experience, because you're, and it wasn't because of anything they did, but they weren't controlling their suppliers to make sure that they'd actually delivered properly. And, yeah. And but it's put me off going back to them. And actually, I have ordered from them once since, and I have actually put a note. Please tell the courier, do not throw the dog food over the fence to the dog. Make
now,
sure
what
they
that
deliver
retailer
it
should have done when they saw that comment, because they see it, it prints out when they put the labels on.
Yeah.
They should have flagged that. Like, their internal processes should have gone, oh, crap. Like, why would the courier do that? And they should have picked up the phone and called you and apologised and said they were going to do something about it. This is taking responsibility for your brand, even when it's somebody external to you's fault.
Yeah.
And I know this happens with someone like Australia Post and courier deliverers all the time. And people are probably listening if they're in business going, oh, my courier driver, I can't control what he does. Well, no, you can't control what he does, but you can complain about it. And if you complain about it, trust me, if you complain about it often enough, something will get done.
That's right.
And it's just reassuring the customer that you've heard what they've had to say and you've taken it on board and you're prepared to go and try and fix the problem. And you can even say to them, you know, courier delivery is outside our, you know, our area of expertise, but we have rung the courier company and we've had, you know, have had this talk with them. And if it continues to happen, could you please let us know, because we will follow it up.
Yeah.
Now, as a customer, if they said that to you, you'd be like,
oh yeah, that's okay.
Kind of, yeah, you know, at least they've kind of said something about it. I feel better about actually ordering from them again and I'll give them another try. But too many people, they just think once they've sold the goods, that's it. And it should never be like that. It should never be, I don't want your money again. You should make a customer want to come back and spend with you, because it is so much easier to get an existing customer to give you more money than it is to go out and pay to get a new customer.
Totally right. So how do we get cash flow?
Okay, so there's a whole bunch of ways that you can get cash flow. And what I will do is I actually did a whole webinar that I've just released today as an on-demand access. So what I might do is say I'll leave my 6 strategies to the webinar and I'll give you a link. It's free access and they can watch it whenever they want. But what I might talk about is more about how you can plan for the holiday season and what we can do to make sure that we've got the cash that we need for Christmas and that period afterwards.
Yep.
And the first thing is, like, these, I'm going to tell you, these are really boring things and I hate numbers. I'm so bad with numbers. I can't count for crap. But I failed accounting.
Not bad for a retailer. But
yeah, well, that's what the point of sale system's for. And I failed accounting the first time round. But the second time round, when I got some help to get through accounting, I actually realised how important it was. And when I was in business, I remember thinking, I don't really get that double journal entry.
Oh, double-sided entries.
That's
see,
it.
I'm an accountant.
I didn't know what it's called.
I get it. Totally love accounting. It all makes sense. Both sides have to balance.
But I get what numbers tell you. So I don't get how to calculate the numbers a lot of the time, but I get what numbers tell you. And quite often, the answer to any business problem actually is sitting there in the numbers as much as it pains me to say it. So these are, I'll give you 3 things that you need to look at. And I can even link you up to my, if you've got a store, I've got a retail holiday planner that will help you plan out the next few months to make sure that you get maximum cash flow. And you can have that for free. We'll pop a link in for that.
Yep.
But the first one is quite simply just tracking what you sold last year or what's been selling really, really well. Because too many retail, I'm not going to say too many, 90% of retailers just order what they think they need and they don't actually look at what they sold last year. So what I say to my customers is, if you've been in business 12 months, go back to last Christmas, grab your point of sale system and see, you know, how many shirts did you sell? I'm not talking about individual shirts, but as a category.
Yeah.
You know, how many shirts did you sell? How many pants did you sell? How many dresses did you sell? How many beach towels did you sell? What sort of accessories did you sell? Did you sell more necklaces? Did you know, sell more bracelets? Did you sell more earrings? Because your point of system has sales system has all this information. You just need to spend, you know, half a day going, I'm going to print this stuff out and actually have a look at it. So if you actually track what you sold last year and then you look at what you've sold so far this year, when you put them together, you can go, actually, I need way more necklaces, because last year we sold like 300% more necklaces and I haven't bought more necklaces in. Or maybe I would get a bigger range of necklaces this year, because looking at what I've previously sold, necklaces do really, really well. So It's not just sort of plucking orders out of the sky and hoping that you get the right amount of stuff. And I'm guilty of that. Like, I will tell you, so many times I would just go, five of those, seven of those, how many in a box? You know, stick them on the list.
I do that with product. Because when I sell herbs and nutrients, that's what I used to do in the clinic. Oh, how many of them do I need? And then they would sit there and you'd end up writing the stock off because my stuff had a life date. And it's like,
yeah, but I mean,
okay, I didn't sell it.
But stock in your store has a life date as well. Mm. And that's actually number three. So let's make that number two now.
Okay, number two. Okay, sorry. Jumped ahead.
Number two is actually just holding on to stock for too long. So back to your point of sale system is you need to be looking at aged inventory. And sometimes point of sale system doesn't have that. But if you can look on your shelf and go, that's been sitting there for 3 months, it's too long. Like, nothing should be on your shelf, the same item for 3 months. It should have turned over. So if anything's on your shelf for more than about 6 weeks and it hasn't moved, you need to think about how you're going to move that stock out. And whether that is discounting, I'm not a big fan of discounting. What I like to do is bundle stuff together so that you've got more stuff going out the door. So you could put, you know, maybe you've got two of those things that actually, you know, quite easily go well together and you do a 20% discount on two or buy one, get one free. Mm. But you've moved two units rather than one unit at 30% off. So it's more about what can you put together to actually get that stock out the door rather than just having it sitting on your shelf. And it is your job as a business owner to know what is selling. Like, anyone who tells me, I don't know how long that's been sitting on the shelf, is like, if you ask the people who work with me, they tell you quite honestly, I whack them because I'm just like,
can't you tell by the amount of dust that's sitting on it?
Yeah. But you should know that. It's your job.
That's right, yeah.
And if your system doesn't tell you that, ask the people working in the store or ask yourself, how long has that been sitting there? How many times have you had to move it in the hopes that it would sell? And it will get to the point where it either doesn't sell. So you've got a couple of options there. You can either, if it's not a seasonal thing, like if it's a stock product line that's not going out of date, ask if you can send it back to the manufacturer and get a credit off your next order. Or maybe they'll let you swap it out for something else. Mm. Or try offloading it to another store who you know sells it really well, and maybe they could swap some stock with you that's not selling very well for them, because sometimes what sells really well for you doesn't sell well for other people. It's just about being creative, but most importantly, it's about knowing what the hell you're selling and how often are you selling it. So these all kind of tie in together. So the first one was, you know, tracking what you sold in the past and, you know, doing your orders based on historical data. And the second one is knowing how much stock you're turning over and how long it's been sitting on your shelf. And the third one is forecasting, which sounds so, so difficult. But when you and I were just talking beforehand, we were saying, I'm saying Christmas is now. And the big trade fairs for retailers were in August and they were taking Christmas orders. So a smart retailer would have actually gone to those trade fairs and forecasted what they need based on their historical data. So they would have said, in September last year, we did X thousands of dollars. In October we did this, in November we did this, in December we did this. Now those numbers are all going to vary. Some people may have way more sales in December than they do in September, but others, you know, the Christmas rush might come early. So they should know when they go to a trade fair when they need the stock by. Do they need it for September, October, November, December? Do they need some every single month? Do they need it every 6 weeks? And based on that historical data, they should know what they're shopping for. So they know whether they're looking for the shirts, the pants, the accessories. You know, we need three more ranges because these sold really well. So our key today is to, you know, grab our existing one that we know sells really well. It's a core product, but then get two variations that are different, but in that same genre, you know, for example.
Yeah.
And going there with that kind of information, one, cuts your bills down because you don't wander around just buying stuff because you like it. But two, it will make you more money because when those months roll around, and maybe it's not Christmas for you, maybe you've got a different season, but when you go to trade fairs or when you go to start ordering your stock, if you forecast that quarter out, then you know when you need it to be dropping in your store. So you're not holding on to inventory. You're not paying invoices for stock you haven't sold yet. Because if you've got trade terms, you sell the product before you have to pay.
Yeah.
So you want as much as possible cleared out for when that invoice comes in. And this is, it does sound really, really boring, and I know it pains people, like it pains me. I don't care if you have to do this with wine, but you have to put aside the hours because you won't get that cash flow if you've got stock sitting on your shelf because you misordered, or more importantly, if you run out, because a lot of suppliers only bring in their stock for a season. So you might get to the middle of October and you've sold out of something that's doing really, really well, and you can't get any more stock. How many thousands of dollars are you going to lose because you couldn't get access to any more stock?
Well, I was actually going to ask you, and this is on that topic, on that question, what about the latest new craze that comes out every year? Now, and I believe, yeah, in August when they have all the trade fairs, they have the latest craze for Christmas. Do you jump on one of those crazes hoping that it's going to take off, or is it best just to let it go? Because some of these things that come out every year, something new comes out.
It depends on what industry you're in. And it depends on if your customers subscribe to the latest trends. Mm. Like if you're a homeware store, maybe they don't want the latest trends. Maybe you sell French provincial furniture, yeah, which in which case, you know, the latest trend might just be a table. So it's about really knowing who your customer is. But if you've got, like a children's toy store is a really easy one that everyone can relate to. I would say, yes, you need to have that latest craze to a degree, but don't invest too much money in it because it's one of those things that's probably not going to sell after Christmas. And in that case, you are better off running out because people will come into your store, but you need to know what you can sell them instead.
Mm-hmm.
So you've forecasted when we run out of XYZ, this is the next thing we're going to sell to people. Mm-hmm. We're going to tell them this is the next big thing. So we're going to have ample big stocks because if ours was Sophie the Giraffe, like, oh my God.
Oh, yes,
so we had baby
that.
Products,
yes.
Right?
I remember Sophie the Giraffe.
Yeah, we never had it in our store. I refused to sell it, and I probably lost thousands of dollars for it. And, you know, looking back, I just say that I want to whack myself because I think that was really silly. But my business was based on independent brands. So we didn't have leading labels. In that community space, the reason people came was because they didn't want to have something that everybody else had. And Sophie the Giraffe, you could buy at Target.
Mm.
So in my case, it was like I refused to stock that. Even though people were asking for it, the people who were asking for it actually weren't my ideal clients. They weren't my ideal customers. They were people who just happened to know that it was easier to come to our store than it was to go to a big shopping mall.
Yeah.
In the hopes that we would have that thing. So I sacrificed short-term, money, but not for repeat business. Like, mm-hmm, I found that the people who were asking for it were not my customers who were coming in, week out.
So it always comes down to knowing who your ideal client is and what their problem is and how you're going to solve it. So that's across the board, whether or not you're in retail, service, whatever. Who is your ideal client? What's their problem and how do you solve it?
Yeah, and it sounds so, so boring, but when I do this exercise with my clients and we actually go really deep, we don't just say, I sell to mums with kids.
Mm.
When they say that, I say, so how old is your mum? How many kids has she got? What kind of car does she drive? Is she a stay-at-home mum? Does she work? Does she work because she has to, or does she get work because she wants to? Does she work full-time? Does she work part-time? Does she have a high disposable income, or is she a single parent? Because that mum with kids, we've just probably described 30 different mums,
yes,
with kids.
Mm.
Which one are you selling to?
Mm.
Because the mum that has a high disposable income and works part-time because she wants to has a completely different spending habit to the mum that's on a limited budget and works because she has to, so she's very time poor and she wants value for money. So those two mums, the words you use, the things you're going to sell to her, the way that you lay out your store are going to be completely different.
It's been fascinating talking to you, and I could talk to you for another hour, but we don't have that much time. So tell our listeners how they can find out more of you and get more of what you do, because as I said, I don't think just what you do is just about retail. It's about business across the board, because everything we've spoken about today can be applied across any type of business. So how do people find out more about what you do?
Okay, so if you just want to see how I work, I have a podcast and a TV show that go out weekly, and you can find those at selenanight.com. And if you want to access the cash flow webinar that is on demand for the next couple of weeks while I go on holidays, you can grab that at selenaknight.com/cash. And if you think that you might like to talk to me a little bit more about how we could grow your business together, you can book in a time for that at selenaknight.com/chat. So basically, if you head on over to selenaknight.com,
you'll find
a whole bunch of stuff. And I'm the Selena Knight on Instagram and Facebook, which is where I like to hang out.
Right. So we'll make sure we have all of the links on this on the show notes when it goes up. Now, I've got a question.
Surprise question.
If we were going to make a movie of your life, who would play you and why?
Oh, do you know what? Oh, I'd love to say Cameron Diaz.
Look, she comes up a lot.
Does she? Oh, because I say this because I once dyed my hair brown. I'm blonde because she did, and she looked really, really good, and we've got the same complexion, and I really, really loved it, and everybody said I looked fantastic. The only problem was the wardrobe that you wear when you're a brunette is completely different to the wardrobe that you wear when you're a blonde, and none of my colours matched.
No.
I have to go back to blonde, but apart from the fact that my legs don't go up to my chin, I think she's funny, and she's got the sense of humour. She's a little bit quirky, but she would also kick your ass. So I would like to go with her. Just trying to think.
She's going to be playing lots of movie roles.
She, isn't that funny? I wonder what there is about her because she hasn't done anything for quite some time.
No, she hasn't.
Who else comes up regularly?
Her and who was the last one? I can't remember actually. A few have been Cameron Diaz. I can't remember the others.
Ooh, we'll have to put it together. You have to go pitch.
I have to go through all my podcasts and find out who's the biggest celebrities. I think I've had Angelina Jolie a few times, I think, as well.
Oh, yeah, no, she just looks a bit screwed up to me. And you've got to give Cameron Diaz credit. She's got a toy boy, so, you know.
Something's working for her.
I haven't got one of those. Mine's perfectly my own age. He is tall, dark and handsome, but... No, I think I just about her. It's about fun.
She is very fun. Well, we don't know her, but she always comes across as being very fun, and she does the different movies, which are fun, quirky, plus she also does the action stuff as well. So
that's her brand, and she does it really well.
Yeah. So I want to thank you for joining us because I have learnt so much off you. I've just written so many notes, it's not funny. So I've got lots of things from it, and I'm hoping all of our listeners have got something from listening to you as well. So if you've got any comments, you've got any questions or any aha moments that you had whilst listening to Selena, please leave them in the comments below the podcast on the website, which is www.angelacouncil.com. And if you're listening to us on iTunes, don't forget to subscribe, or you can also subscribe over on Stitcher Radio for the Android users amongst you, which is like me, and leave us a rating and review. I'd absolutely love to know what you think of the podcast, this episode and every other episode, because I love to get the ratings and the reviews. It helps me make sure I'm delivering the best for you. So until next week, when we're going to come back with even more fun, more excitement, more of everything, from my heart to yours, infinite love and gratitude. Have a great week. Bye. Thanks for joining us today on this episode of Healthy, Wealthy and Wise in Business. As always, if you've got any comments, please feel free to leave them on the website, www.angelacouncil.com. While you're over there, you can also grab your 14-day stress-free living challenge. And if you'd like to learn a little bit more about what I do, why not pop into our private Facebook group called Stress-Free Living. So until next week, when I'll be back with some more exciting information for you, from my heart to yours, infinite love and gratitude. Bye for now.